I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm glad you asked that, Graham. Something's bothering me. Where are the Daleks? My oldest enemies, and they're nowhere to be seen. One thing is for certain. Wherever they are, they're sure to be planning something. Something horrifying.
Can I get you anything, sir?
May I please have another holy zone?
You know what's funny? I'm annoyed that that was an audio sketch, because if a Dalek was on a beach drinking mojitos, I bet you anything that they'd be wearing coconut halves over each of those round knobbly things on their bodies, you know, like a coconut bra, but it doesn't matter. Hi, I'm Paul Verhoeven here with you for another episode of The Doctor Is In. I hope you all enjoyed my chat last week with Mandip Gill. That's Yaz to you. Because this week on the show, I'll be talking to the other Yaz, Yasmin Abdel-Magid, writer, engineer, broadcaster, and massive, massive Doctor Who fan live from London. Well, I say live, it was a pre-record. Basically, I just lied to you. Do I feel bad about that? Yes, a little bit. All right, I'll change the subject. Time now for Whose News Is It Anyway? First up in Doctor Who news, Custard Creams news. I've never thought I'd say that out loud. Arwell Wynne-Jones, who is the designer of the new TARDIS, has explained in an interview that the biscuit dispenser in the new console is actually a nod to Jodie. If you look closely at the new TARDIS console, specifically in the episode where Jodie was running around operating all the different dials and levers, it's got lots of really fiddly, great design elements, but maybe my favourite is the fact that it dispenses custard creams, which the Doctor discovers when she actually, you know, hits the controls for the first time. According to Wynne-Jones, he got that idea when Jodie Whittaker was filming her first scene. He explained, "I wanted to make the console feel like it was Jodie's. I'd started designing the TARDIS before I knew it was Jodie playing the Doctor. And then when I was at the filming of The Regeneration, I found out that custard creams were her favourite biscuit and an idea was born." That is just fantastic. The real question here is, and I want you all to consider this, if you were the Doctor, which biscuit would your TARDIS dispense for you? My problem is my ancestry is Dutch, and I don't know if you've ever had stroopwafels or stroopwafels. I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's sort of like it's waffle, right? Like it's a round waffle wafer thing, and it's got caramel in it. Now, I treat them like they're biscuits. I dip them in tea. Problem is, because of the high caramel content and the fact that the TARDIS console would, I assume, heat up a bit, there will probably be like gooey caramel drifting through the circuits. Drifting. Caramel doesn't drift. I have no idea how biscuits work, apparently. Problem is, there's actually bugger all Doctor Who news this week, so there's only one more story. According to The Mirror over in the UK, there's not going to be a Christmas episode this year. It's been so long since it's been 13 years. Chibnall has said that apparently, after 13 years of Christmas episodes, they've basically just run out of ideas for Christmas stories. I sort of think we might have mined and possibly overmined every single thing we could about Christmas in Doctor Who, and the last time we more or less ignored it, Chibnall said. What are your thoughts on this? Because, I mean, we're probably going to get a bonus episode around the story. Chibnall said, "I would definitely think there's another episode after the end of the series," and The Mirror in the UK reports that the episode will be a New Year's Day special instead of a Christmas special, with a story related to the coming of the new year. I'm pretty much okay with this. As Chibnall pointed out, the last Christmas episode of Doctor Who didn't really have much Christmas in it. I mean, it had snow, but there's nothing inherently Christmassy about snow. Christmas doesn't have a monopoly on snow. Also, and this, I mean, we may have been burying the lead here, but this report from The Mirror also suggests that this might be the only episode of Who in 2019, as apparently the second season is delayed, which means we might not get more Doctor Who until 2020. What are we going to do during that year? I mean, listen, folks, if you want me to do The Doctor Is In during the hiatus year and just do it about classic Who, or maybe just, can we get an interview with Tennant Can I just talk to Tennant every day for a year just to bridge that gap? Anyway, apparently that's all the time we have for news this week. So without further ado, let's have a chat with Yasmin Abdelmageed.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I was just outside a lift before you called.
Ah.
Do you mind if I just get in the lift and you can call me in a minute just so that I'm in like a spot that I can sit for about 20 minutes?
Wait, in a lift?
Yeah, because I'm just going to get in a lift and go
Yeah, sure. All right.
I don't want the line to cut out.
Yeah, okay, great. I'll call you back in like, what, 2 minutes? 1 minute, 2 minutes-ish?
Like, 1 minute. One minute is fine.
All right, girl. I'll talk to you in a second. Okay, bye.
All right. See you in a sec.
I don't know whether she's taking the call in a, like, is there just a lift she can use for 20 minutes? Is that a thing? I mean, it doesn't seem safe. I mean, from like a safety perspective, that just doesn't seem pertinent. I mean, okay, I'll call Yasmin back now. I mean, you're all listening to this. This is how the sausage is made. Wait, has it been a minute yet? Christ, this is a riveting radio. Hang on, here we go. I'm just going to try calling now, because if she is in a lift and she picks up, then, you know, suddenly we're in an elevator. Let's all clear it up together. Here we go. I'm now calling Yasmin. Calling. It's going to be one of those episodes, I think.
Hello.
So wait, just, I mean, the listeners are going to be curious about this because I'm probably going to keep all this in. Are you calling for, are we talking with you inside an elevator, and is that safe?
Uncertain. I mean, yes, I am inside an elevator.
Right.
Whether or not it's safe or not, I'm unsure. Also, the listeners just decided to not listen to my instructions.
Okay.
And just going on the different floor.
But okay, wow. Wait. So if people get into the elevator with you, are they going to become part of this interview? Or like, how is this going to work?
It's now a great situation.
All right, great. Okay. All right, well, it's just, you know, the more the merrier. Oh, she's pressing buttons. Jesus Christ. Well, you know, I mean, thematically, it seems thematically loosely on point, because, you know, it's a show about someone flying around in a tiny box with no idea what they're doing, so I
actually planned it that way, yep.
Oh, you didn't, you bloody liar. Okay, first of all, what's it like having a character in the show with a name remarkably similar to yours? Because I just wanted to call you Yaz, I mean, ever since, you know, we organized this interview.
Honestly, when she was like, let's have tea at Yaz's, I was like, yes, let's all have tea at Yaz's.
Oh.
Come to my house, Jody, please. It's, not only is the Doctor female, but I am literally in the show. Like, I cannot be happier about the situation.
I think you are in the show, and I think you should be getting bloody royalties at this rate. Do you have... what's it like having so much, like so many boxes ticked in terms of the show speaking to you, you know, on so many new levels? Because, like, what's it like being you and a Doctor Who fan with this specific incarnation of the Doctor, with her specific companions? How does it feel?
I feel like they just sat down and they were like, let's make a Doctor Who season about for Yasmin. Like, specifically for Yasmin. Like, also, it just happens that I'm in the UK now, right? And
yeah.
So I'm like, oh, wow, I recognize these places. And, oh, wow, like... It genuinely feels... I actually didn't know that I could reach this level of Whovianness, right? Like, I've unlocked so many new, like, depths of... Yeah, it's actually... Yeah, it resonates in a way that that is not only intellectual, but deeply spiritual, Paul.
Okay, because, I mean... I get that, because I went to London for the first time with Tegan, I think, a year ago, and, like, I mean, I assume, much like you, I grew up watching Doctor Who on the telly, and then suddenly got to London, and I'm like, oh, I'm just in the show now. Like, I'm just walking around in the show. How have you found, not just Doctor Who, I mean, primarily, because it's a Doctor Who podcast, but how did you find moving to London and having it just drenched with cultural... tropes, you know, whether it's Who or Bond,
it's
or Potter.
It's a total trip. Like, and I mean, it's funny because my English or British friends are constantly like, yes, Yasmin, we know. I'm like, look, it's the bridge. Or like, look, it's the book. I mean, I definitely grew out of that after about 3 months of saying that. But genuinely, even, I'm also watching Killing Eve at the moment, which is another, like, there are a whole bunch of really great British series, right?
Yeah.
And it's really funny being like, oh, wow, that scene, I can go outside and go there,
yeah.
Right? It feels surreal, and it just makes you feel like you are in a magical fantasy world.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure that the Brits, I don't know if they necessarily agree with that, but I know that it's an experience shared by many Australians when they get here. They're like, oh, wow, this is real.
Yeah, and I know it's slightly harder to do with Doctor Who, because Doctor Who's set in... Well, I mean, it's set in Sheffield now. Have you been to Sheffield yet? I don't.
Yeah.
Have you been?
It's really funny that I haven't been to Sheffield. I have friends from there, funnily right. enough. But what I really enjoyed, like, they made, like, references to, like, Sheffield Steel and to be fair, like, the buildings aren't that different looking in London in some parts to Sheffield. So it does generally feel quite familiar. And the accents are great.
Yeah, the accent's thick as gravy. It's awesome. And, you know, the other Yaz has a very... Hang on, so just a quick elevator check. Are you doing okay? Is anyone else in there with you?
I had a good bit of banter as they laughed at in this group situation in the elevator, they laughed at my love of the bosses. But I'm now outside the elevator, so...
Oh, damn it.
So we're all good.
Oh, bugger. Okay, I thought this was going to be like a weird running thing. That's okay.
Oh, the whole... I mean, I could definitely get back in the elevator. That could be fun.
Would you? Would you? Could you get back in?
I think I'll just ride the elevator for the rest of this interview. To be fair, like, you know, I'm leveling up, as it were, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, great. Well, look, I mean, I'm not going to... The listeners won't... I mean, I'd say they won't know. They couldn't tell if you actually got back in, but we know. Like, we can smell it. So if you want to hop back in and just press all the buttons and just see what happens... So listen, I guess I should get on to... the topic at hand. How did you... I mean, we're talking about going to England and having been infused with, you know, Britishisms like Doctor Who and stuff. How did you get into Doctor Who? What are your earliest memories? Were you a childhood convert?
Yeah. So my father has always been a sci-fi fan, right? And so we were like, initially forced to sit in front of the television and watch... And, you know, like, the old school seasons of Doctor Who, the graphics that are just... super confusing, and so, like, I remember sitting down and being, to be fair, slightly confused as to what was going on, but then kind of growing up, to be, my sort of first personal, like, adult relationship with Doctor Who probably started around David Tennant, early years of David Tennant,
sure.
and Donna, and even, what's the name, Billy something?
Oh, Billy Piper, yeah, Rose.
Companion. Yeah, Billy Piper, the companion, like, those are my early memories. Mm. And there was like, a South Asian woman before Billy Piper, I think, or maybe slightly after. Those were, like my memories of Doctor Who were, like, I loved fantasy. Like, I loved reading fantasy. For me, like, books and stories were an escape from the small Brisbane life that I lived, right? And so Doctor Who, I think, was this really, not only, like, profound... I guess, commentary on all sorts of issues, but also really funny, right? A lot of the time, Doctor Who's really funny, and I really enjoyed that kind of, like, mix of, like, fantasy and comedy, and like, British humour and drama and wit, and sarcasm often. And so I remember, like, the early years I would, like, completely binge-watch, and then I sort of went through a couple of years of, you know, stepping back. I think, to be perfectly honest, I really enjoyed Matt Smith at the beginning, and then I kind of fell away towards the latter end.
That's
of Matt Smith's time.
That's fair.
Yeah. And then obviously Peter Capaldi, and I just expected him to swear all the time. Then I guess the hype for Jodie has been pretty exciting. And honestly, I'll be really, really honest. I did not know how to feel about it just because I had seen Jodie in another series called Broadchurch.
Yes.
And she played this, like, really grief-stricken mother. And I felt really strongly about that show. Funnily enough, David Tennant was also in that show.
Yeah.
And I really did not know if I could imagine her in another role. But the minute I saw that first episode, and I was like, wow, she is really the Doctor. You know, that kind of, the funny kind of personality quirks and so on. I was like, wow, she is completely Doctor-ish. I don't know how she did it, but this is great. And I fell in love immediately.
So is she ranking pretty high on your favourite Doctors, or is she at the top? Where does she
sit?
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm going to have to give her a bit more time. I think David Tennant will always be my favourite.
Yeah.
like, I've just got a soft spot for him. I don't know if it's the accent or the just like the ridiculous charm or like his relationship with Donna, which I just rated so highly. But Jodie's come in, wow, very quickly. I didn't realize it was the second place. So, and that's only 4 episodes in. So this is great.
Yeah, I'm noticing she's a lot gentler and a lot more passive, but I'm really looking forward to seeing where they take the character, because again, she's basically still cooking, like the cement's still wet with her doctor, I think.
Yeah, exactly, and it'll be really interesting to see how she deals with, like, different pressure points, and, you know, whether they kind of develop her in a different way to previous doctors, or, like, because the reality is that she is a woman, right, and so does... Do the writers think that changes the way that you deal in certain situations or not? I'm really curious about it.
Well, yeah, because presumably when you, if you suddenly flip genders, I don't care what alien species you are, you're going to get an influx of chemicals. Like, you're going to get some sort of, like, weird new instincts and feelings kicking in. And that's great. Like, that's sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you think they're going
Can
to...
I just say,
yeah.
When I don't know if the doctor gets a period, but when the doctor gets their first period, let me tell you, it's going to be hilarious, because men just have no idea, right?
Oh, like, oh God.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, that would be hilarious.
It'll just be like, yes, I need help, yes, Amy, something's gone wrong.
Yeah. I think I need a plug, what's going on? So I think that, I don't know if that's what, I don't even know if aliens get periods, but, it's an area to watch.
Are you still in the lift, by the way? Did you get back in?
There is now a cleaner cleaning the lift.
Well, I mean, ask them whether...
It's a whole life cycle.
All right. I mean, no, you know what? It's probably best to leave out of this. Listen, what do you think... I mean, obviously the Doctor's a woman now, and, you know, that's fantastic, and Jodie's nailing it, but what do you think the role of a show like this serves in a year that is, like, the pint of bin juice that is 2018? Like, what do you think this show is... What do you think it's doing? What do you think it's capable of doing?
I am really excited about the show because in the way that it is at the moment, because I think it has the potential to bring not only a whole new group of people to Doctor Who, but show that... you don't have to be a particular way to be a particular show. And let me explain that. So, like, the way that I see this particular season is that they've been able to do diversity in a way, to me, that seems like they're not screaming about it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yes, okay, everyone's like, yeah, the Doctor's a woman, like, that's great. But, you know, we've got different ages in the companion. We've got working class folk in the companion. We've got a black person and an Asian person and a white person. We've got someone dealing with grief. This is, like, genuine diversity, right? We've got two men who are having conversations about grief and emotions, one who is trying to help the other through that in a way that is gentle and in a way that is talking to, you know, masculinity. And, I mean, I think generally the Doctor Who has, like, tried to touch on these things, but in a time like we are today, it is incredibly profound and incredibly needed. And also... the number of people that, you know, have always thought that sci-fi was for, like, you know, no offense intended to anyone, but, like, white nerdy guys. Right? I think that's, like, if you're outside the world of it, that's sometimes what the impression is.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, there's this great sci-fi show that's got all these people that I can, that kind of look like me. Maybe it's not just for people that aren't like me. And that, for me, is really exciting. Like, the number of mates that I've told about Doctor Who, and they're like, oh, I thought that was, like, some super nerdy thing. I'm like, I mean, yeah, but also... You know, it's like, it's a show about people, it's a show about humanity, it's a show about adventure, and it's a show where it's not just about people and aliens that don't look like you. It's an entry point, I think, for a lot of folks who would never have considered the show before, and that is really, really lovely to me, because when you love something, you want everyone to kind of get amongst it, right?
Yeah.
And so I'm definitely having Doctor Who watching parties at my house.
So do you think that if we flash back to young Yaz, as I'm now calling you forever, being forced to watch Doctor Who, and instead of, you know, Tom Baker bumbling into a papier-mâché lobster the size of a house, it's Jodie Whittaker and it's the current crew of the TARDIS, what effect do you think that would have had on you as a kid?
Can I just, before I even hanging on to it. Can I just tell you, like, I, even as you said that, even as you asked that question, I just felt this, like, oh, I don't know, like, it's quite emotional, right? Like, it's, I, particularly as, like, a young, you know, African-born Muslim girl growing up in Brisbane, I just never saw myself on screen, and I don't think I ever really was sad about that. I just, that, I thought that that was the way the world was, but I always wanted to have adventures. I always wanted to, you know, I was out here reading The Famous Five and The Secret Seven and, you know, watching Doctor Who and imagining myself in all of these places, and then to actually see myself, like, to know that there are kids who are, like, young black kids or young whatever kids watching this and actually seeing themselves having these adventures, I think it may give them this passport to an imagination they didn't even know they had, or at least I hope so anyway.
Do you think that that sense of adventure would propel someone like you to do something as stupid as plowing into a lift and doing a podcast?
I would probably do that anyway, but who knows? Sure. Who knows? So, I mean, sure. This is my new target. Like, let's be real.
Yeah, it's going to be very hard to make you leave, actually. I don't know if you're allowed to inhabit an elevator. I think it's technically a thoroughfare. Is this like...
Look, I have snacks in my bag. It's fine. I can, as, you know, as in the last episode, I can now live here for 6 months.
Okay, look, no one's making you leave. You can stay there as long as you want until Mr. Big comes and yells at you or whatever. How weird was it seeing Chris Noth in Doctor Who, by the way? How weird was that, having Mr. Big rock up?
Oh, my goodness. Say that again. The elevator cut it out a little bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is the place you're choosing to have a hunger strike in any way impeding on the recording process? That's okay. It doesn't matter. I was talking out of my ass. I think my point was made. Please don't leave the elevator, Yaz. I'm loving calling you Yaz. That's a thing. I need you to change your name officially.
I love that you're calling me Yaz, because now I feel like I'm in the show, like at this very moment.
Well, she was on. Mandip was on last week. I wish I could have had you two in the same elevator together. Just, you know.
Oh my God! What?
Yeah.
Bruh. I'm gonna have to find her. That sounds creepy.
Yep, it does. And the police know where you are now, because I'll tell them, wait, which elevator you're in? You know, just keep it stum.
I'm in elevator 7, obviously.
Don't tell me. I see what you're doing. Well, look, Yaz, please just make sure that you got some fresh air in there, because I know those things fill up with carbon monoxide pretty quickly. And you've been an absolute delight. And, yeah, I'll have to have you on it again sometime. I think that was weird. And good.
That would be great. Thank you so much for having me, Paul.
It's time for Companion Piece. This week, we're doing something very, very different. Typically in Companion Piece, I will look at a beloved Doctor Who companion, but I thought I'd do something a little off the map this episode. Do you like Data from Star Trek? You know, the android who's learning to become human? How cool would it be to have him on the TARDIS? Yeah? Just keep that in your head for a second. Now, do you like sleek Art Deco android design? Do you like a compelling companion arc? Then you'll hate Chameleon! Now, the Fifth Doctor met Chameleon first. Chameleon was a shape-changing android, hence the name. And the Master was using Chameleon to impersonate King John. And the Doctor was like, you're not all bad. Come with me on the TARDIS. K-9 is long gone. Wouldn't it be cool to have a robot buddy learning how to be less of a robot on the TARDIS? Wrong. Wouldn't it? Wrong. Whatever you're about to say, wrong, it'll suck, Doctor. It will absolutely suck. Let's just pause for a minute, everybody. Why am I so down on Chameleon? Not down with Chameleon. That would imply that I liked Chameleon. Why am I so angry about Chameleon? Because even the showrunners and the crew and the cast, specifically Peter Davison, hated Chameleon. Now, Chameleon only appeared twice in Doctor Who. That doesn't mean Chameleon was only in two episodes. It means that Chameleon was, like, around... It's very complicated. Let me explain. Basically, further appearances of Chameleon in the show were absolutely impossible due to the special effects required. Now, a scene involving Chameleon was filmed for part one of The Awakening, but got edited out before it was aired due to the episode overrunning. They just cut him out of the show, I guess. I mean, look, The Awakening had a lot of filler in it already, so I don't know. They could have just cut some... Let's be honest. As a result... There are no references to Chameleon in any episodes between the King's Demons and Planet of Fire. Not even in The Five Doctors, which takes place after Chameleon appeared in the show. People said Chameleon wasn't just a great idea executed in a really dumb, garbage way, but that the actual robot, the actual prop, was cursed. This was a legitimate concern of people at the time. Chameleon's software designer, Mike Power, that is a great name, that is a powerful name, was actually killed in a boating accident. I'm not making fun of that, but the guy who designed the robot died in a boating accident not long after the robot was locked in to appear in the show, and he never made a fully functioning document of operating notes. So he never got to put the instructions down. Meaning people had to operate a complex robot without having the instructions because the guy who invented him died in a boating accident. Again, not laughing at that, just laughing at the stupid robot. Okay, so they tried to provide an explanation in the plot as to why the robot just wasn't functioning properly. And they did that in an episode called The Crystal Bucephalus, which is just would make the best band name ever, where Chameleon's loyalty, I'm doing rabbit fingers here, to, you know, very strong minds causes him to be used against the Doctor, which prompts him to decide to just stay in the TARDIS so that he can't be used against his friends in the future, you know, which is really noble of him. Although, in truth, he just sort of sat there like a rusted car hulk in the yard of a redneck. Eventually, Chameleon was possessed by the Master and shapeshifted to look like Perry's dad or something. And then he got shrunk, and then he got unshrunk, and then he got unpossessed. And at the end, at the very end, Chameleon was, you know, in agony over his possession and his manipulation. And he begged the Doctor to kill him. And his final words were, "Destroy me, please." And they did. According to Peter Davison in this featurette called Metal Man, any sign of regret shown by him / the Doctor during Chameleon's death was pure acting. Because, you know, he was glad the dumb robot was dead. And that marked the end of this stupid, idiot robot companion in Doctor Who. The moral of the story here is this. Not all companions are created equal. Some are created very badly by a guy who dies in a goddamn boating accident and doesn't leave any instructions. Sadly, that's all the time we have for this week's episode of The Doctor Is In. Thank you so much to Yaz number 2. I mean, she's Yaz number 1 to me. And thank you so much for listening. Make sure to head across to iTunes and please rate and review the podcast. Tell your friends about it. Don't forget to get across to the website, thedoctorisin.show, to check out all the other people that have appeared on this show. And speaking of people appearing on this show, the next few episodes are going to be bonkers. Next week, I'll be chatting with a certain writer of a certain episode that is airing a certain next week. And the episode after that, another one of Doctor Who's companions is going to be popping into the studio to have a chat. So make sure you tune in for that. In the meantime, though, keep... Gosh, should I come up with a catchphrase? God damn it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.